This is Joseph Burke, and you're listening to Farming on Mars.
Hey, I'm Sierra Ware, and this is Farming on Mars, a podcast that tells the stories of agriculture on the South Plains of Texas. I grew up on a cotton farm in the world's largest contiguous cotton-producing region, and now that I'm a college agronomy student myself, my love for farming and having great conversations with those who have come before me has only grown. This is about the land here around the South Plains. With an average annual rainfall of only 18 inches and the reddish color of the majority of soils around here, it can be just about as harsh sometimes as what I would imagine Mars being like. This week for episode 8, I interviewed Joseph Burke, who's a grad student working on his PhD in soil science and a great person to get perspectives from on just about any topic. But this week, I had the chance to talk to him about his research, his path into soil science, and how to find happiness in your career. So let's go ahead and jump into this week's episode.
My name is Joseph Burke. I am a first-year PhD student in soil science at Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas. I am a proud Red Raider alumni with a bachelor's in interdisciplinary agriculture with a teacher certification and a master's in plant and soil science, both from Texas Tech University. My current research project is examining how roots can mineralize their own nutrients in semi-arid soils and what the mechanisms are that control that nutrient cycling.
Could you talk a little bit about your master's research?
So my master's research was really focusing on understanding soil health in the West Texas cotton industry. So specifically what I studied was the physical, chemical, and biological properties that are associated with soil health. One of the most interesting components of my master's research were we identified the temporal nature of carbon and how carbon cycles over time, both organic carbon and a fraction of organic carbon called permanganate oxidizable carbon, or POXY. And what we've seen is that POXY is directly related to, the cycling of carbon is directly related to the photosynthetic rate of the plants in which it's residing. So for instance, as cotton is growing, we see an increase in organic carbon deposition in the soil as we increase the amount of cotton production in the field. So that's kind of what led me to my PhD research, is trying to understand how do plants modify the environment they live in, and then how does that modification of the environment stimulate their own growth? And so that's where I'm continuing on for my master's. Some of my other master's work looked at water availability in soil and trying to track water changes with cover crop use. And it's a common idea on the Texas High Plains that cover crops limit moisture to cotton when planted back-to-back with each other. So we harvest our cotton, let's say late October, early November. We plant a cover crop. That cover crop grows through maybe March, and then we terminate it. A lot of farmers are concerned, though, that that cover crop is going to steal any moisture that they're going to have to plant their cotton into. And what our research suggests is that that necessarily may not be true. While it does limit more moisture than evaporation alone, compared to like a conventional tillage system without a cover crop, it enhances water storage later on. Now, the caveat to that, though, is that you have to have spring rainfall to supplement that deficit or irrigation capacity. So I don't recommend it on dryland fields, but it's something that farmers could try if they have an irrigation method, because it does limit moisture stress later in the growing season compared to the conventional tilled systems. The other side to that, though, is that we did not see a yield increase with the use of cover crops compared to the conventional systems, except where we had the mixed species cover. Where we had that mixed species cover, which included four different cover crop species, it performed just as well as the conventional tilled system. So those two systems were similar, but the rye system, where we had a single species cover, it didn't perform as well as the conventional system. And then finally, the last component of my thesis research, the last major point, was we examined the economics of a conventional crop, or sorry, a conservation cropping system over time. And what we found is that there is it is cheaper to move to a no-till with a single species cover, but it you don't make as much money compared to a conventional tilled system. And so there's still some limitations to the conservation management practices that we've been investigating, and we're trying to piece out what those changes are and what those limitations are, so that way maybe we can find out the best way to maximize farmers' benefits on the Texas High Plains.
It seems like there are a bunch of different terms to describe the quality or health of soil. What do these terms mean, and how are they important to the farmer?
So you are asking the most contentious question in soil science right now, I think. There is this idea that, or I guess we should start with the history of soil health, right? So soil health really became a primary component of focus after the Dust Bowl. So we had a significant wind erosion effect here on the Texas High Plains and across the High Plains that resulted in about 5 teragrams of soil being lost from the soil surface. That's a ton. Literally tons of soil per acre were lost during the Dust Bowl. And so it was a national catastrophe, and we really were looking at a way of trying to solve this problem. And so the precursor to the NRCS, the Soil Conservation Service, or the SCS, devised a series of management practices that would improve a soil's tilth. And that was really the first idea we had about what we would consider soil health, is this soil tilth idea. And that's the ability of the soil to grow crops. And it's essentially its ability to be plowed was where the term came from. So moving forward through time, we developed more and more conservation practices on the High Plains and other areas, cropping rotations, buffer strips, things like that. Contour planting was a really popular idea in the late 50s and 60s. And so then once we really started building on our soil microbial ecology, that's when we really started to focus on this new idea of soil quality. And that term was really coined in 1997 as a way of identifying soils and their function, or what does this soil need to perform for me? And that's really taken hold as our understanding of soil health. In 1999 and 2001, the NRCS released field kits that allowed us to measure a soil's health. Unfortunately, they weren't really, unfortunately, they were not calibrated to a lot of different farming systems. And so a soil health or a soil quality score in one region might equate to a lower score in another region just based on soil type. So if we don't have as much clay in our soil, we may have a lower score. Or if since we don't have as many earthworms in our soils because we're in a semi-arid environment, it may reduce our score compared to another region. So because of that, it didn't really take hold. But most recently, there's been a reflux in this idea and an interest in this research. And so we've now coined the term soil health. And soil health is essentially the idea of the continued capacity of a soil to perform a function with minimal inputs. The two key phrases there are perform a function. So soils have functions based on the need. So an urban soil that grows a lawn has a much different soil health need than a soil that's used to grow cotton on the Texas High Plains. Or vice versa, a soil that's used for riparian habitat is very different from a soil that's used to grow cotton. And so based on that, farmers or conservation planners or NRCS personnel or researchers can identify areas in which they want to help protect that soil or keep it healthy. And then the second part to that is to continue to do that same function time and time again with minimal inputs. So how can we stimulate nutrient cycling so we can reduce our fertilizer applications, for instance? And we know if we can reduce our fertilizer applications, we reduce cost. And hopefully that would help yield benefit to the farmer where they are spending less per acre while maintaining the same amount of money. And so that's kind of the idea being behind it, is treating a soil like a living system and promoting this idea that it can serve its own functions time and time again. And it's, you know, it's difficult to personify soil and make it be alive, because it is an inorganic substance that contains lots of life, right? I mean, it's a habitat for microorganisms. They say that one teaspoon of soil contains more life than there are human beings on the planet. And so because of that kind of diversity in the area, that's what we're really going to try and focus on is how do we stimulate this above ground, below ground, and at the root level population to help support plant growth over time, or whatever the function may be of that soil. I primarily focus on its function as a plant growth regulator.
What was your path into soil science?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so that's a fun one. So I did not take a traditional route. I like to draw a squiggly line and say, this is my path to soil science. So I grew up on a goat ranch in South Texas, which you would not really think about with soil, but we came around full circle. My parents were always really big into conservation. My stepdad served on the Soil and Water Conservation Board for our hometown for my entire life and before my entire life, essentially. And so conservation was always a big deal in our family. I attended the Youth Range Workshop when I was in high school and had the opportunity to go and explore. I could really care less about the range management side of things. That didn't interest me, but I was really fascinated with the soil side. So I went to college, and I thought that I wanted to be a teacher, and so I went through the whole undergraduate program of becoming an ag teacher for Texas high schools, and I went to student teaching, and while student teaching was an excellent experience, I came out of it not feeling like I was finding the thing that I wanted to do. So I worked a few jobs, worked at a grocery store for a little bit, and then I worked at a beekeeping company for a little bit longer, and then an opening came up for me to attend graduate school in soil science. And so I contacted one of the professors, Dr. Jennifer Moore-Cusera, and asked her if there was an opportunity for me to get my master's in soil, and she jumped at the idea. And so I enrolled. About 2 weeks later, I started graduate school. And then that first semester, I really tried to dive head deep into soil science, absorbing as much of it as I could. And that same semester, Dr. Cusera took a job as the National Soil Health Team Lead for the Western Division in Portland, Oregon, for the NRCS, actually, in soil health. So we kind of got to keep that component. And since I was on a presidential fellowship for my master's, I had research funding. I just needed a supervisor. And luckily, I was taking Dr. Katie Lewis's soil fertility class at Texas Tech, and she was all for me joining her research program. So I joined on as one of her graduate research assistants, and through her, I got to work on the soil health project in La Mesa, Texas. It's a long-term conservation study, about 21 years now, that we've been examining conventional tillage versus no tillage with a rye cover and no tillage with a mixed species cover, and examining different soil health conditions under those practices. Also measuring soil moisture biweekly. And then we also collect monthly sample or soil samples monthly, so that way we have the opportunity to examine how soil changes over time. It's been an amazing experience. And so I really recommend students from non-traditional soil science backgrounds to think about pursuing a career in soils, because soils really do impact everybody. And if you come from a different background, sometimes it gives you just a different way about thinking of things. So sometimes I definitely put my teacher hat on when I come into a room, because I am not the best chemist in the room, nor my best biochemist, but I bring a unique set of communication skills that I think a lot of soil science students as undergrads don't really get the opportunity to be exposed to. And so I encourage all those non-traditional students who might be interested in soils or might find an interest to definitely give it a try, because soils can be applied to any discipline of science and are definitely an interesting place to go. Soil science was the first thing I think I could achieve that, be who I want to be personally, and also just enjoy life. And that's a huge component that I think we leave out a lot of times, is we like in this rush to have a career and be successful, and we forget that we have to be happy human beings. And so that's something I've been trying to work on a lot, is just being a happier person. Because I get bogged down in the bitterness sometimes, and you just gotta kind of take a deep breath and just let it out, you know, because it'll kill you if you're not. I mean, not kill you. It'll stress you out, though, and you get gray hairs and wrinkles, and, you know, and you can only dye your hair so many times a month, and it's expensive. So you just got to be happy, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least find a way of like having that kind of happiness. And I think if you're holding back something personally, you can never be 100% who you need to be anywhere, right? It's like when you're stressed out at school, sometimes you don't wash the dishes when you're supposed to, like that kind of thing. And so I really feel like you have to find a way of getting around that.
What are one or two key takeaways from your research that are important to the farmer?
So I would say with cover crops, give it a try, but try small first. I would say, you know, start off with a single species cover like a rye or a wheat and give it some opportunity to grow. Don't terminate it until the end of March or mid-March based on where you are. So we're in La Mesa. We normally plant hopefully the first or second week of November, and we grow it through usually the last week of March or the second to last week of March. So we shoot for around the 20th to the 22nd as our termination for that. So give it some time to grow. So that way you get a little bit of growth in the area and you get something to go back into the soil and to protect it. So that's one of my things I say. Just give your cover crops an opportunity to work. Don't write them off until you try. And then the second thing is I would really say go to the meetings. There's some really good extension folks and researchers here in the area who are doing some really interesting research and have some really innovative ideas that they want to share. And I would love to be able to go over all of them from either Dr. Ritchie or Dr. Woodward or Dr. Lewis or Dr. Wheeler. Even Dr. Keeling has some amazing stuff that they're doing in their lab program. And I really think that attending these meetings that are available to people here in the area will give you an opportunity to see what's going on. How can you apply it to your field? And then what takeaways can you, maybe share with your neighbors? And so I know that it's hard to get to some of those meetings and that they can be a little bit expensive, but I certainly recommend that those are excellent opportunities for you to go out and just see what's available in your area and what researchers are doing, because it's your taxpayer dollars at work. And so go out and see what they're doing, ask them questions, and let them be the resource that they're there to serve as.
What's your perspective on this region?
That's what makes the High Plains so interesting, is that, you know, people think that it's just the Bible Belt, right? Like, it's this ultra-conservative area. But when you kind of get out and you start exploring the region, you really start to find that there is an amazingly diverse group of people that have completely different mindsets from each other, but all come together for a common goal. And I don't even think they realize that they're doing it, but they just subconsciously... they're just nice people, and they achieve the tasks that they need to achieve, and they get things done. And I think that's what makes this such an interesting and amazing place to work and live, is that, yeah, is it the Texas Hill Country? No, the scenery is not. But, you know, you just go outside and you look at the sunsets, and you interact with the friendliest people in the state, and they're great people. And I think we can all agree that we're all working together towards a common idea, and we all have different views on that, what that common what that goal is and what the outcomes are, but we all are passionate about what we're doing and moving towards that goal. And you know, that's one of the reasons why I chose Tech over going to another institution, was because I felt the community that existed there. And that's why I love being at Texas Tech. If I could have done my PhD at Tech, I probably would have, but I just don't think that I could have done a third degree at the same school and had the same career opportunities. And so that's why I went to A&M. But I still have the opportunity to come back and do my research all the time, right? Because I'm here once a month or twice a month to do work. And so that's what I love, is the people here are just, they're more amazing than any other part of the state, in my opinion. I haven't lived a lot of places, but in the two places I've lived, they're better here. And it's just, there's so many interesting stories to tell, and I'm kind of jealous that you get this opportunity to go around and just find out why people do the things they do, and then what they find from those things.
And that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening to Farming on Mars. Again, thank you to Cody West for allowing me to use his song Melody. Please go check out his album called Green. You definitely won't regret it. Well, I hope you all enjoyed learning more about Joseph as much as I did. Please remember to check back again next week for another great episode about the people of the plains.
don't know.